Hey, quick note before we jump in. Unfortunately, I made a complete rookie move and recorded my audio from the wrong mic for the episode today. Still going to air it, but apologize for the less than stellar audio quality you're hearing. That said, still a great discussion and hope you enjoy. The E-commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff for their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells. You can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by Fulfill.io. Imagine for a minute that you had a central business brain that looked at every facet of your e-commerce operation, shipping, ordering inventory, accounting, everything to help you make better decisions, not just about growing your top line revenue, but about being profitable. If that sounds compelling, you should check out Fulfill.io. They're the only cloud ERP designed to help you efficiently and most importantly, profitably scale your 8 or 9-figure brand. They do that through better forecasting, smart supply chain planning, identifying operational bottlenecks that you can go in and solve to open up the full potential of your business, and also a really powerful and incredible warehouse management system for reduced misships and mispicks for better customer experience. And they're the highest rated ERP among e-commerce Fuel members, not NetSuite, not Skubana, not Odoo, but Fulfill. So if you're interested in growing, but growing profitably, you'll definitely want to check them out. And you can do that at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill.
Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm really excited to have David Moore. He is the owner and founder of HolidayCoro.com. And it's kind of criminal that have not had him on to do a deep dive about just his life and his business. He's been one of our absolute top contributors in e-commerce Fuel, just a really accomplished and smart business owner. And what I really admire about his business, which is he creates like holiday and Halloween lighting and lighting controllers. We'll get into that in just a minute. But he's just in the, you know, as the episode title kind of attests to, the king, I would say, of operations and efficiency and automation. Just thinks about this at a level that few, if anyone I have ever met, does. So very excited to geek out with him about how he runs his business and streamlines it and automates it and operates it. So David, welcome to the podcast and thanks for everything you've added to the community over the years. You've been phenomenal.
Thank you. Well, I thank you for contributing back to me because while I give a lot, I try to give back at least as much as I get. And I have, of course, received a lot of value over the years from ECF. I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars of direct attributable value I've gotten from ECF. So the least I can do.
Yeah. Well, thank you. That's awesome to hear. So we're going to talk about automation. I'm going to ask you about ClickUp. We're going to talk about Odoo a little bit. We're going to get to how you automate like production and inbound and receiving and storage and pick, pack, ship and order and customer flow, all this stuff. Cause I know you've thought deeply about all these things, but I want to frame it up a little bit before even we talk about what HolidayCoro is. You know, when I look at what I would guess your advantage is, you know, maybe you have, when I think about the things you write in the forums, it's not, you know, rarely if ever have I see you like really geeking out about or talking about how you're optimizing ROAS or how you found, you know, you're hacking this new ad platform. Your website is not super flashy, and I don't say that in a derogatory way. It's just, you know, it's you haven't spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on the website. When I think about like what your operational advantages, at least one of them, it's that you're an insanely efficient operator. You have custom products and a vertical supply chain. And I would guess you have a lot of repeat business based on a killer reputation operating since 2008 and also a lot of B2B clients. When I think about like some of the studies and data I've pulled in the past, so many people obsess about marketing and ROAS and flashy design and neglect all the other things. And that has been kind of, that's come out in the data I have looked at in terms of when businesses say, hey, here's our results, here's what we're focusing on. That seems to kind of jive with the data I've seen in aggregate. Is that a fair kind of summary of why you think you've been able to be successful?
At the root cause, or at the root of that, is this Bozzi index. And my classification is a specialist. And if you look at one of the major taglines that define specialist as a category, it's they don't want to work to bring in business. They want business just to pop on. They want to do a good job, be known for their product, and people just come to them. So does that mean we don't market? No, actually, I actually have a marketing degree of all things. And I do Google Ads. We don't run them year round, but we do Google Ads. And so I know how to market. We do mailings. But are we as dialed in as some of the stuff that I see go on ECF? Oh, no, by all means. I mean, I'm just at awe at some of these people who can like work through the process and A-B test something for 100 times and variations and get it down. Our products are very complex. Our sales process is very long. So attribution is complicated for us. Mm-hmm. We have attributions and sometimes they'll run 2 years. We have a fairly sophisticated CRM system that, you know, customer reaches out to us. We keep working with that customer until we get a sale or we get a no or a ghost, right? We'll just keep emailing them. Right now we have customer service dialing people. It's a slow part of the year. We have people dialing them right now, calling them up personally. So we've taken all our data, sorted it all. We know who our frequent purchasers are. We've then figured out which ones have not purchased since last year, but they purchase on a frequency that's usually every year, and figure out what their goals are. And then they put it into a spreadsheet. And then we have a hot list of customers that we can dial up in September. It's go time. And we already know they're ready to buy. We know that they've purchased in the past. So I'm a huge data guy. Between everything we've got in SQL, so every single order for 15 years is in SQL, with every single item, every single customer, and combined with ChatGPT, there's nothing I can't eke out of it. I have even a remote question on something, it just comes out.
So diving into SQL a little bit, database that you're putting everything into, what does that allow you to do for someone who is not familiar with it? Why is that important?
So how SQL came about, so we use Volusion. Nobody uses Volusion. It was originally, it was a platform that was great. In fact, it was really amazing. And it has a lot of features that exist within it today that existed 15 or 20 years ago that even platforms today don't have. So I'm sometimes surprised when somebody will say on Shopify, oh, it doesn't do that. And I'm thinking, holy smokes, our platform's been doing that for 20 years. But the reality is it's a bad platform. It's dead-ended. The company's gone bankrupt one time. So I can tell what the writing is on the wall. So what we've done is we've taken that data, and originally this all started as a project to print customized labels. So we're huge about accuracy. Everything is about accuracy and efficiency. We take every process, we figure out how we can chop it down, get as much time out of it, get as many errors. If we get an error, why did it happen? We figure out the root cause. That all culminated in we need labels for our custom products. So we make these control boxes and they're 100% custom. They could have hundreds of different possibilities of controller power and cables and boards and all this.
And these control the lighting arrangements that people buy for you for Christmas, for Halloween, stuff like that.
Yes. So, and I can talk in a bit about the major classifications of our product, because there's three major groups of products. There's the base products, just like the lights themselves. The props, which is something we manufacture here. We machine it in a production facility we have here. And then the actual controller boxes that actually run all of the lights themselves. And so the controller boxes tend to be very customized because we have a modular system. So think of it as like a PC. You might buy a PC and put in a different processor, different kinds of memory, video card. So it's modular in that way. And so just like you would go to Dell and order a PC custom with the right amount of memory or the right whatever you want, we do the exact same thing. But of course, we don't have Dell resources. So the first step was is we needed to get labels that basically printed out exactly. Just like at a restaurant, the kitchen might say, here's the food. I want it cooked this way. I want it done like this. I need this on the sauce. I need this, you know, salad with this dressing. all that needs to be documented so that somebody in assembly doesn't have to think about it, and they can just simply follow the recipe, put this wire in here, put this color. It shows them pictures of the plug types, like if it's going to another country and what voltages. And so we needed that as a label. So we said, well, first thing we need to do is get the data out of Evolution, which again, not a good application. So a good friend of mine that I've known for 15 years, I used to work with him in our old job where I retired from, super whiz, he wrote up a complete script that replicates the entire contents of our store every few minutes into a SQL database that's located on our facility at our building. So we have basically real-time access to that data. And then I can just go in and query it. So originally, it was just done for the labels because our label software looks at the orders and says, oh, here's an order. I need to print it. And then it also prints like the custom labels that go for the cartons, you know, that go on the boxes and a variety of other things. And so it's fully synchronized. And then, of course, once you have the data sitting there, you go, well, how could I use that? Because now it's in a nice, easily real-time accessible platform. And so now, especially with ChatGPT, it's just made it brain dead simple to do really complex queries against data. I mean, questions I couldn't answer in the past that were very hard, took hours to do, I can do them in just minutes now.
And how are you leveraging those to actually grow the business? Is it just, I mean, if some of the obvious ones are top customers, but you can get those pretty easily out of Shopify and other platforms. What are some of the kind of the second or third order, more nuanced queries that you're using to inform your business?
Well, let's say, for example, so we need sometimes people, let's say at customer service level, want more of a, is this a good customer or a not as good customer, right? Because everybody's got customers, and some are, you'll make exceptions for anything for them, right? Because they're long-term, high-value, repeat purchases. So the first thing you want to know is, who is that person? You need a numerical reference to say, this person is good or in maybe not so good, right? Like maybe they buy every once in a while and the margin's low or whatever it may be is your classification of good or bad. So we use SQL to actually go in. Two numbers are used. So we pull out frequency. This generates how often they order because our business is 60% repeat. So our customers are generally buying something 1 year, they upgrade, they add more things, new things come out, hey, and they add more things. So it's usually an iterative process. People like building these things. And so they're usually buying every year. And what we're looking for is a pattern. And so we actually have that summed up into a single number ranging from 1 to 10. So one is, I bought 5 years ago and I haven't bought since, and it was a low value purchase. Not a repeat customer. A 10 is somebody's bought every single year, multiple times throughout the year for the last 10 years. That would score 10. And so we put that data right into our CRM and help desk system so that somebody can immediately click on a customer and say, oh, we'll tell you what, no restock for you, or we'll next day that for you because you're a high value customer.
So is that a programmer, and forgive the interruption, but you have a programmer who goes in, will you have the SQL database that's synced every day with your store. And so anytime a ticket comes up, this is a custom integration, I'm guessing you programmed with APIs that will inject it. So every ticket that comes up in Gorgeous or Helpscout, whatever you're using, it will look at that email address and try to match that against someone in your customer database and then give them a 1 to 10 rating as a customer?
Well, mostly. So we upload this data. So it comes out of SQL. It's in CSV format. Then we push it into our help desk system, which is also connected to CRM. So we have one customer record within the CRM help desk world. We use Zoho. And so that customer record, if you click on it, it will actually show you these two numbers. One is frequency of purchase, and second is value. So frequency is how often they purchase. So are they likely to purchase soon? Are they not likely to purchase? And then the second is just sheer value. What's the margin of the products they're purchasing? Do they purchase large amounts? Are they a customer purchase $100 order, or are they purchasing $5,000 orders, right? And so that gets them on a scale of 1 to 10 also. So 10 is somebody, a commercial customer, buying every year. They're buying $20,000 worth. And you will, as customer service or whoever, or if I'm in sales, we can then sort on that and say, oh, okay, well, this is a high-value customer. So it allows you to very quickly see that. And that's all enabled through SQL because the data starts in SQL, gets put in there. Unfortunately, it only gets updated once a month, but This is not an absolute. We're not looking for the exact amount that they purchased. You're not even looking at the amount of purchases. You're just looking at a number of 1 to 10. If there are 10, you need to do whatever it takes for that customer.
So I know you're hyper process focused. So safe to say that the guidance to your customer support team goes something along the lines of, hey, if you're a 10, move heaven and earth to make this customer happy. If you're a 9 to, you know, 9 or 8, you know, you can do anything up to 500. How do you think through, again, only knowing because I love processes, I know you, of course, are very effective. It's your specialty. How do the numbers map to what your team is empowered to do for different customers?
So our head of customer service has been here for 8 years. She knows every product. I mean, she's not going to be doing sales or highly technical. She can do pre-sales, sort out customers, you know, when she gets them on the phone and say, hey, this is a high value customer looking at all the data. So we don't set forth in those particular cases rules. So if she says, hey, the guy wants a free shipping coupon, right? This is an order over 5,000. I want free shipping. And it's an 8. Probably she's just going to give him free shipping. Or if they're asking for a discount or a match or something like that, I believe in hiring smart people and then letting them to their own devices. Usually they always do the right thing. If they don't, maybe I disagree with it sometime, but you know, it is what it is. You have to give them the data though. They need to know from which point. I mean, do you give the person who's cheapskate and never buys anything of any real margin value the free shipping coupon? Maybe not, because they're probably going to buy it anyway. And if they don't, they're just going to find it somewhere else. So they need to know who that customer is. And those stats allow them to do that.
Do you get those stats on inbound phone calls as well? Or is it just when you are reaching out to the customers?
So I have 20 something years of IT experience. So my IT experience starts back in the mid 90s working for Microsoft. And so I came up through corporate IT. And so I think almost if my hammer is something, it's IT, right? Everything is solved with IT, right? And it just happens to be that e-commerce is really congruent with IT, right? So if it's running a 7-Eleven, I'm not sure that IT would be a huge help for me. So I tend to look at IT as a solution for most of these problems. I just use IT for a lot of these various different problems. I think I've lost track of what we were talking about.
Oh, that's okay. I was just asking, are you able, when you get inbound phone calls from people, are you able to be able to look and say, hey, this is a 10, this is a 2 in terms of the customer quality and order history?
Squirrel, sorry about that. So I love everything IT. So we do 3CX as a phone system, and I love telephony for reasons I don't even understand because I don't even like the phone, but I'm amazed always what you can do with telephony today for an incredibly low price. So when somebody calls in, the system automatically tries to match up the phone number to any record we have in the system. Obviously, if somebody's never called us before, we don't have any record of that. But if they are a current customer, when they call in, their information already appears up. So this is just like you would have at a big company where they call and they go, hi, are you calling something? And what's your zip code? Just to verify who you are. We do that already.
And what's the name of that service? You said telephony?
So telephony is just the overall umbrella upon which all phone systems, right? Today, SIP services, you know, where you just basically get your phone service over the internet. So this would be Grasshopper and those kinds of things. We use a very sophisticated, roll your own, super controllable system called 3CX. It's like everything we do, super cheap, super amazing, but fairly complex to implement. But once you get it running and integrated, and we have it integrated with Zoho, even though it's not technically one of their best integrations, it still works. So if somebody calls in, it does other things. For example, if they leave a voicemail, it will take their voicemail and look up the caller ID, find their record in the system, and then link the ticket to their account so that when you go in and look at the voicemail, you can just click over to the side and say, oh, here's all the tickets. You have to get the customers who they'll call you, then they'll go on the website and chat you, but you're unavailable. Then they'll submit a form, and then they'll go to Facebook. And so you can see all those things because we keep them all in one system. So the phone system, when they leave a voicemail or call, if they chat, all the chat information and logging goes into the same ticketing system in Zoho. And Facebook posts, Facebooks are a little bit manual, but we link them to individuals. And so we can do all that and see off to the side, hey, and then we just click, 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 merge all those tickets. It's all the same problem he's talking about. And then we can handle them without inadvertently trying to go down several paths of, okay, this person handles this. So this just goes to the whole trying to be efficient thing. Because again, during our peak season, people want to talk to us very rapidly. And if we don't talk to them immediately, they just everywhere from every channel of communication.
Talk a little bit about your tech stack and how it enables some of the automation. Like, I know maybe you could mention what you're using for customer service. I guess you use Zoho for a lot of stuff, which is, I think is a suite that covers a lot of things. So, or maybe Zoho is just the best place to start. I know in the forums, like you've raved about Zoho. It seems like you really love them. Can you talk a little bit about, I have no affiliation with them at all. What is it? What do they do? Is it like, I think of it, and again, I don't know them very well. Is it like an ERP, like a kind of an ERP suite type of solution? And what does it allow you to do? You've already touched on some of it, but talk a little bit about why you love it so much and what it does for you.
So again, my history is IT. So I spent years, I was a Microsoft trainer. I mean, I have huge experience. I've got experience with, all the big tech players in that market. So I understand what software's out there. And what amazed me, so this actually came about by ECF. Somebody was mentioning, Zoho. And I was like, what is this Zoho? I'd never even heard of it. Zoho is the stealthiest company I think I've ever met. In fact, they didn't even advertise. They're like the Tesla, right? Like that refuses to advertise. Like, we're going to do an awesome job. You're going to love us and you're just going to recommend us, right? And so we don't need to advertise. Well, they are that. They do not, for most cases, don't advertise. You just never hear about them, right? So no ads in the airport, nothing on your, Google searches and stuff. What Zoho is a company that's very highly focused on technology, and it is a single platform. I think the closest match you might have is something in the Microsoft sphere, but more like Odoo. Like Odoo is kind of like got everything. It's got inventory, it's got forms, it's got websites, it's got, and all these things can be deployed as modules. But Odoo, you can, of course, deploy it yourself or, have it deployed. It tends to be more customizable, more of a infrastructure upon which you can link all these pieces together. Think of Zoho as one step above that with less complexity. So Zoho is an entire suite of, you can't even begin to imagine how many applications. It's something like 60 or 70 applications. We've got, just within my sphere, I use Zoho Forms. So for example, if you go to our website, you find these very sophisticated forms that are multi-page, that make selections. Okay, if you're returning something, what's the order number? Formatting to make sure that they submit the right information. And then it pumps it right into our desk system, right? Assigns it to the right group so that, the ticket doesn't go to sales. It goes to support, for example. And so that's just one application. They have another one, like you're familiar with Zapier. Zapier's clone in Zoho is called Flow. And so we still use Zapier for some really oddball applications because it has so many connectors. But for Zoho Flow, we actually connect almost everything. So somebody goes to the website and submits a subscription to our mailing list, and then we add them into our desk system and add all that information. So we have an account pre-populated with their email and their phone number if they gave it to us. And so it's all these pieces. It's also doing fraud detection. So just like many other people, you're looking for certain zip codes or known problems or customers or things like that. So we have hundreds of these little automations all within there. There's a ton. We use Zoho Desk for actual desk software. There's just a ton of these apps. Zoho Analytics. Oh my goodness. Don't even start about the same
analytics. Looking at them right now, they have signatures for like DocuSign. They have affiliate programs. This is crazy. Do you pay per module? Is that how this works? Or do you just like keys, you buy once and you get everything?
Well, they do it both. You can buy it on a module basis. Like I only need to collect data off of a form and you can buy forms, right? But the reality is it's cheapest just to get what's called Zoho One, which is basically you buy everything. There's no limit to the applications you get. You just get everything. We use Zoho Sales IQ, which is just an amazing chat application integrated to our website, which is, of course, all integrated to CRM and desk, right? I mean, we use Zoho Support. So we sell a technical product, and we often have to remote into people's computers, right? And so it automatically provides that. We have some of our support people. I don't tend to use it, but some of our support people have a Zoho Lens, where you can get the customer, they run an app on their phone, and then they show you the problem with their physical product, and then you can see it on your end. So it's sort of like Apple's FaceTime but instead over a platform using their phone. To get a support session, like if you want to book a session with one of our support people or salespeople, you go into Zoho Booking, right? And then it allows you to book. And then if you need to be charged for it, if it's a paid session or free session, it checks people's calendars. There's just an amazing number of applications. I cannot say enough about Zoho.
What is it? What does it roughly cost per? Do you know how the pricing works? I'm guessing
it's about $30 per person. And for $30, you just get everything.
$30 per person per month? That's it?
Uh-huh.
Wow. I was guessing it was going to be an unholy amount more than that. It seems like, it has the potential to kill like a couple dozen SaaS subscriptions that you have right now.
Oh, yeah. I think Zapier and we do tax separately, some other weird, very specialized stuff. Xero, we don't use their books application because we were on Xero before that. Probably if we were joining them today, we would just use books because it's plenty good enough. My wife ran for political office, used Zoho, ran the entire, they have campaigns just like, like MailChimp and Clivo. And so they were able to use books for all their accounting, and they brought in everybody to use Desk to coordinate all the people, calendars and the email. They have a website. I mean, all of it was within a few dollars. It's really absurd how cheap it is.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at E-Commerce Fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archive discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce Fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into to avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right. Back to the discussion.
That's insane. Yeah, I'm looking at their pricing. Anyway, neither of us are affiliated here, but this looks very cool. Moving on from Zoho here, I want to ask you about, I want to get into the weeds on some of the other automations, inbound, production, storage location, pick, pack, ship, because you've spent more time than anyone I think I've ever met about on the pick, pack, kind of ship stations that you set up in your warehouse are very cool. But this has been, for someone who loves automation, you've been doing this for years, if not decades, decade plus. But we're in this kind of amazing frontier period where there's so many things with AI, with ChatGPT that are happening. How are you thinking about that? And maybe specifically, what are some of the areas that some of the new emerging tech, some of it's great, some of it's grossly overrated. Where have you been able to plug that into your business and see additional gains in efficiency? Because if you are able to see additional gains in efficiency and productivity, I'm guessing most other people are going to be able to see exponential gains if they didn't on your baseline. So what have you been excited about and been using in your business?
You know, the tech stack is, I hate to say it, just common sense. It's more that than anything. I mean, I have a subscription to ChatGPT, and I go into it all day long doing everything to rewriting contracts or writing things, answering questions, SQL, programming. It's value, don't get me wrong. But the reality is ChatGPT will not get stuff into the correct box 100% of the time. That is humans evaluating situations and correcting them. I think most of the automation that we've done, because automation is a solution to solve problems that keep occurring, right? So one, you don't have to keep doing them. So let's say, for example, you keep having a problem with people shipping the wrong item, right? So you figure out what the root cause of that problem was. Was it labeled wrong? Did we not have enough data for the picker? Did the packer then misunderstand something? Is the product not labeled correctly? So you have to get to the root of every single little problem and then say, is it cheaper to keep doing this mistake or is it cheaper to just solve it? And in the vast majority of cases, it's almost always cheaper to fix it. Right? So if you're having problems, it could be beyond just the physical world. It might be, hey, somebody submits a PO box or somebody is shipping to a reshipper, right? In Florida or Canada, like Michigan or something. And so you might need to do certain things that you've noticed over and over again. Every time we ship here, we need to do something special, right? So why not spit out a label with that order that says you need to do this something special here? So I think it's just a process, an iterative process, figuring out what the problem is, what's the root, and then solving that problem. And then some of it's technology. And absolutely, again, I think everything can be solved with the IT hammer. But sometimes it's just education of customers and process. Our PIC SOP is 5 pages, single-paged, with just an insane amount of detail. Like every single problem we've ever encountered has been documented and resolved in that document. And if the person simply follows it, they will pick at a 99.9% rate or higher. It's just, you know, 15 years of learning that's been incorporated in one thing.
How do you, like, let's do the pick process, for example, a 5-page single place space document. So you can understand or read that. That's going to take, you know, 5 minutes at least, you know, and then to internalize it even more. So how do you think through kind of the interplay between simplicity and comprehensiveness? Because I feel like I'm the owner of my business. And if I find if SOPs are too involved, I won't follow them because it's just too much, there's too much friction there, right? To read through the whole thing. And it's I just want to get it done. So how do you think through that? And how do you get a team to really, a new pick packer that comes on board to actually be able to internalize 5 pages of all those details?
You sit somebody down, you go through each thing. So somebody who's experienced, let's just say pick the picker, right? The picker needs to be trained. Picking is generally not super complex. Our products are not barcoded. They do have locations within the warehouse that are generally pretty accurate. And most, but not all of our products have a part number on them. Not all, because you know, you might have a metal rod and it's just not convenient to put that in there, but the box they come in is labeled. So what we do is we go through and we say, first, here's a document. Read through this. And then the current picker, who's experienced, explains why all these things are the way they are. Because that document doesn't explain how we arrive. Sometimes people don't like to follow a process they don't believe in. Like, why are you making me circle every single number in here on every specification? So if a product says it's 12 volts and it's black and it's got this length, we make the packer, for example, circle. Okay, they look at the product. It says 12. Okay, they circle that. If you've ever looked at a car, for example, you know, you ever see the bolts and they have a little yellow line on them or white line on them, that indicates to the person checking it down the line, hey, this person actually tightened that bolt because, you know, if the bolt's not tightened, somebody might get killed. So all those things have a process. And once people realize, oh, you got to tighten the bolt and you got to mark it so the guy down the line knows you actually really tightened it, right? It also forces you as a person to say, well, I'm not just marking the bolts, right? I have to mark the bolt after I tighten the bolt on the assembling the car. So we have the same processes in our system. They all exist for a reason. They didn't just magically appear. And we require everyone to follow those processes. And when they don't get followed, we root cause back to it. Why did you pick this wrong? Our customer service person's pretty adamant about making sure when she discovers mistakes. And then we do some basic stuff like a picker never packs, right? Like, so you could never have a packer that comes in at 7 a.m. It's like, well, I'll just pick some stuff off the shelves and pack it. I know I've been here for 5 years. No, that doesn't happen. You can never pick and pack because you're 99.9%. You combine that with 99.9% on packing, then you get a near perfect accuracy. Almost no mistake can be made. So there's just some processes that we have. You know, technology takes a place in there, like the label process that I was explaining earlier. That solved a lot of problems where people couldn't read this really complex packing slip that, you know, had 10 lines in it. And it made it much easier for people to verify at the pick level and the ship level. So we've made things as simple as possible. And sometimes automation takes a play in that. And sometimes a lot of this is just not technology. Sometimes it's just common sense and process. And if you don't have that process, you either have to accept the mistakes. When we have an AOV of 150 in off-peak and 250 in peak, a mistake can cost you a huge amount of money. A $200 order could cost you $500 by the time you ship it back, and the customer service and the next day and your customer goodwill and all that. It just is. It's always cheaper to do it right than do it wrong.
We talked about Zoho quite a bit. ClickUp, I believe, is something you use and love quite a bit. And someone who's very much contemplating moving the entire business, ECF's operations, everything over there as well. What do you love most about ClickUp? A lot of people, I think, are familiar with it. If they're not, it's kind of think of Asana, but slightly more customizable, more automation oriented. What is it that you love about ClickUp? What are you using it for? And like, how does it play a role in your business and automations?
I would say the most common thing is ordering. That's the number one thing, right? So this is, the pack stations are out of tape, right? Or, the keyboard's broken. We need to order a new keyboard, or I need a USB cable or whatever. I need printer ink or whatever's down. So we have an ordering system that allows us to select common products and all that. And that goes in, it's then assigned to a particular person who orders it. And then it allows us to track. So for example, I'm looking at it now and it says, assigned to this person or that person. Sometimes there's a status called clarifying where, you're like, you told me to order this part, but we don't know what the exact part number is. Is this the part number? And then we go to ordered, and then of course shipped. And then finally, once it comes in. So it's kind of like a receiving system also, because the person receiving it in the warehouse has to go through, find the thing that was ordered and check to see, hey, we ordered 20 rolls of tape. Did we get 20 rolls of tape? So it's not a sophisticated system for, like ERP and management of goods or anything like that. But for what we need, it's plenty good enough. Definitely better than nothing.
Interesting. And I can't help but notice that you're looking, like we're on video, of course, you're looking up at this, much higher than what I guess the normal monitor is. Like you've got like 4 monitors across the ceiling here. So I can't see it. You don't need to turn around. But how many monitors do you have that you're looking at right now?
I have 4 32-inch 4K monitors. So one on my left has 16 cameras. So we have 40-something cameras at this location and a few more at our other old shop that are all integrated together so I can see them in one place. I love cameras. It allows me to see what's going on. It's helped us document all kinds of problems. You name it. Love cameras. Just love them. And they're cheap. There's no reason not to have them in a physical facility now. And then at the top, my second monitors, and this is all efficiency, right? Because these monitors are cheap. I'm going to have them for 10 years. My eyes aren't going to get any better. Might as well have this many. The other monitors are above me. Typically, if I'm looking at 2 spreadsheets, I've got maybe I've got a forecast for what's being ordered, and then I've got the actual order on the top. And then on the right, often if we've got a chat or some other piece of ancillary data, maybe looking something up on the website, maybe we're updating something. So I don't think there's any loss to having more monitors other than people may think you're a little weird.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, if you would, your pick, pack, ship station, and maybe you can start with how you use cameras there to solve issues and disputes with customers who may or may not claim to have something that was shipped. But talk a little bit about how you've optimized that the pick, pack, or not the pick, pack, but the shipping and boxing station and put everything in the box, because it's pretty amazing how much thought has gone into that.
So it's an iterative process. So the first pack. Oh my goodness. To think again, back to where we were talking at the beginning of you can't know good if you don't know bad. We started packing on Costco, 8-foot by 2-foot tables, right? And it doesn't take you long to realize that's not a sustainable solution. And I remember I was doing that. This is, again, almost 15 years ago. And then some guy goes, I didn't get my product. And I thought, oh, I wonder. And I had a camera in the shop that kind of was on it. And I could kind of prove that the order had what he wanted. And it turned out to be fraud. Ultimately, tried it several other times where I didn't get my stuff in the box. So the first step was, you know what I need to do is do cameras. And even back then, it was doable. And today, it's just laughably cheap, right? Like the storage and the cameras, and it's all so amazing and good. And so the first step was, hey, you know what? We need to build something, first of all, so that we can make our boxes, because we make about 60% of our boxes from scratch. So all the pack size people out there, I hear you. We've got something we're working on there. But we have handmade boxes because our products are so unique. You can get hugely different items in these boxes, and we just can't stock enough boxes that are stock sizes. So the first step was, we need a packing station, one that allows us to custom make these boxes very easily. And it became clear to me a variety of factors were involved. One is, we need to have cameras, because if we can prove what's in the box, that will solve problems. And it has done wonders. We have people who argue with us. No, you didn't ship that to us. I got plenty of stories there, but not to get off track.
But it's going to be so satisfying to be able to send them the video. And I mean, do you ever hear back from them when they say they didn't get it and you send them a video of it getting put in their package with it sealed up and sent out?
Yes. I'll give you one that just stands out like nobody's business. We had this guy and he said he didn't receive about $600 worth of lights. And we're like, no. We shipped them. We absolutely shipped them. Here is the video of your box being packed with our tape on it. You didn't get the box. We do what's called subpacking. So actually, products are within another box so that the box gets damaged, the product won't fall out, because we'll often pack stuff very densely. So we send him the video. He goes, no, you didn't ship it to me. And we go, no, we shipped it to you. And we kind of got to this impasse. Well, a little later, it turns out his daughter thought that the lights looked good in her playroom. So she had a playroom upstairs, and she had taken them from his area where he was building this stuff, taken them upstairs and had put them all over her toys. He even sent us photos. He goes, I can't tell you how sorry I am. And then he sent pizza the next day to the staff, because he really thought. So that's where I think the problem becomes, is customers can see evidence. And no matter what you do, you show it to them, they won't believe it. There, of course, are others that go, oh, I magically found it, right? Like, oh, it's here. And then we do a lot of really creative subpacking where a part will be inside of another part. We have products that are rolled up, for example, like a rug kind of a arrangement. And we'll put stuff inside of that. And people will not open it up, despite the fact that we have stamps saying, open up all boxes. And so it has saved me, tens of thousands of dollars over the years, chargebacks, all that kind of stuff. Again, it's good when the customer agrees with you. When they still don't agree with you and you don't believe reality, there's not much you can do. You just, charge back or eat it.
David, man, I would love to, if we had more time, we're getting low on time, but otherwise I'd love to go through just every step of the receiving, the production, the how you store stuff, how you do the pick, and get more into your pack station as well. But we'll have to save those for either another discussion or maybe in the forum. So I'd love to kind of cap off our episode here with a quick lightning round that goes through. And, as the name would imply, I just got about 10 questions here. Feel free to give me a quick, fast, rapid fire answer to them. But first, if you're cool for doing that, first one
Let's
is
go.
How would you describe the e-commerce environment in 1 to 3 words right now?
Growing and challenging. It never stops changing. It's just every day there's a new challenge. There's something out there, new technology. It just constantly requires all that. So it's always a challenge. Nothing ever is static in e-commerce, it seems like.
What's the process or automation that you are proudest of in your entire business? Like you're saying, this is the one. This is the one I'm so proud of.
Electronically, I would say our labeling system, because it works phenomenally good. And we even implemented it on a new business we just brought on. In the non-automated, I would say our SOPs and processes around pick ship, they are just so rock solid. We very, very rarely make a mistake in shipping product. And we ship a lot of complex product that's not barcoded. And it's amazing we've managed to do that.
You live in Houston. If you weren't living in Houston, where would you live?
I used to live in California. On a personal basis, I would live in California. I loved it. From a financial standpoint, tax standpoint, probably not, but probably I would live in California or a foreign country if I'm retiring.
You love squirrels. I can actually see a squirrel little sign in the background there. You have a collection of a number of squirrel things. What's your most beloved piece in the squirrel collection?
So, I have a whole selection at home, and my wife made me, there were so many, she then decided there was only one table which could hold all squirrel things because it had become so many. God, there's so many of them. I have ceramic ones. We have them outside. I've got them up here. I mean, it's like kids. Can you really pick one? I love them all. I love squirrels. I think they're energetic and they get things done. I think they're just a model for me. I don't like that they get up early in the morning. I don't know about that. They seem to not like to work in the evenings, but you know, we can't all be perfect mammals.
And I also noticed you got the little ECF Fuelie up there as well, which is super cool.
I do. I have the ECF up there for the post of the year with the air tags. Yeah, those are still paying off. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll link up to that in the show notes. David's got a great post about how he put an Apple AirTag in a shipping container and everything that ensued. So, best decade of your life?
My 30s. I did a lot of Burning Man. I've been to Burning Man numerous times. I used to be very big in the arts. In Houston, we have an art car parade with 300 different art cars that are all these crazy contraptions. I'm not a creative person. Probably most people notice that. I reverse engineer the formula to win and kind of figured out how they all won in the past. And then I built something to meet that goal and won first place out of 300 cars. So I did all kinds of fun stuff. I built an amazing house that, you know, nobody would ever build as in a later point in their life. I just got to do all kinds of things. I feel like I got lots of stuff done. And I feel like I got, you know, traveled a lot. I'm glad that I got it all done in my 30s so that I have plenty of time to focus on the business now. Because I'd be disappointed if I didn't get other things, hadn't got those things done and felt like I left behind.
What's the hardest part of your business?
Ooh, it's, I think like most people, it's people. It's finding good people, keeping good people, making sure everybody's making good decisions. It's always people. It's not money. It's not processes. It's not stuff. I can make all that happen. People just don't happen. They're very complicated. And for somebody in my personality, it's even more complicated.
How much money in the bank is enough? I always ask this for everybody. And so you can answer one of two ways. You can either say, hey, if I have X, a lump sum in the bank in terms of cash or like liquid investments, that works. Or a guaranteed annuity amount per life. You know, I'm going to get X coming in every year without having to work anymore. If you made any more or if you had any more in the future, it'd be nice. But if you didn't, you'd be good. Be able to live a full, rich life with X. What would X be?
Actually, when I retired from my corporate job in 2015, I already had enough to retire and live the life that I live now. We don't live lavishly. We're pretty low-key. Been a bit of a problem to spend money because I'm so cheap. But I think if that number would probably be $10 million, I say, you know, you can do a lot of things, live a lot of places, and do a lot of things without any concern with $10 million. I think that would be enough. But, you know, you still got to work and do something because my dad was working until he was 78. He worked the day before he died. So it's genetics. It's in our people. So, I don't think I'm ever going to retire.
Yeah, spoken like a true squirrel right there.
Keep the nuts going.
How many hours a week do you work?
I generally work 7 days a week. Very rarely. I do take usually 1 or 2 weeks of vacation a year. That's been hard. My wife forces me to do that, and that's good. So we're going to do some great things this summer. But 7 days a week is pretty normal. And I don't really, I mean, it's work. I get that. And sometimes it's a grind, but I really enjoy it. I don't enjoy mowing the lawn anymore, fixing the gutters or whatever. You know, this brings me more joy than those things. And like I said, all my people, my grandfather worked till 83 selling cars in a car lot. I think it's our genetics. We just have to work. My mother was working until she was 77.
So this next question is rather, and again, this isn't customized for you. It just happens to be in the flow, but given the conversation, kind of interesting. Number one hobby, and you can't say work. So if you're at work, away from work, the one thing you enjoy doing, what's that?
I love building stuff. I've always built stuff, art cars, buildings. I just love physical construction. There is only so many hours a day I can sit in this chair. Sometimes I actually have to get up and go out there and just see what's going on because I get so bored sitting in this chair for 10 hours a day or 9 hours a day. I just have to do something physical. That's probably one of the bad things about, you know, doing this is that it's, you're so valuable at this level that you need to be sitting in front of the computer because that's where the most value add is. Going out and bailing boxes, not valuable, but boy, I love doing it for some reason, you know, driving the forklift, love driving the forklift. I don't know that my warehouse manager likes me driving the forklift, but I love driving the forklift. And so like, you know, this last Memorial Day, I was out there redoing all the pallets to get all the pallets in the pallet slots because I was a little bothered that they weren't efficiently done. And so not everybody subscribes to the ethos of that level of obsession.
And last question, who's one of the more interesting people you've met through ECF? Could be in person with live events, which you've been to a number of, or it could be just in the forums that you always appreciate their contributions. But who's someone who stands out? It's like, I just, for whatever reason, I like what they're putting out there.
Dustin, Michael, it's interesting to see that how people clump together. And this kind of goes to that whole Bozzi index. You know, if I look at who likes my posts and who I'm liking, we tend to be the same people. And if you look at other people, they tend to be the same. So you got these people who are builders, you know, the people building these $20 million brands, and they tend to all kind of congregate together and like to talk about those things. And they resonate with those statements. So there's a small core group of people that I constantly find myself clicking on the like button for, that they're really great people and they kind of share it. I don't know if that's good, but you tend to zebras with zebras, right?
Yeah. So that's Dustin Chafin, I would guess. And which Michael are you referring to?
Jelf. I remember it was like, yeah, he was that. Yeah. I digress. I don't want to get off on a track here.
Well, David, this has been super fun. Thank you. And again, in the off chance you're listening heck, everyone needs lights for Christmas or Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. Everyone needs lights for Christmas. If you celebrate it and also Halloween. So or just the holiday season, holidaycoro.com. Check it out. Make sure to check out the amazing. He's got some, you also have some really fun YouTube videos. I was digging in for this just went through and looked at some of the YouTube videos you have of the customer submitted light shows that people put on. And it's pretty cool. It's just entertaining to browse your site. So whether you need them or not, check it out. It's a very cool website and just really appreciate not only you just coming on and talking about automation and the business you've built, which is super impressive and a lot of respect for what you've built, but also just being in the community. Like I said, at the top, you've been just such a phenomenal member and contributor, just entrepreneur in the community. So thank you for everything you put out there. And it's been a joy having you in the group. And yeah, so fun to be able to dive deep and geek out about automation. So thanks for coming on and being a part of this.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
Given you've made it to the end of the episode, there's a pretty good chance you're fairly serious about this e-commerce stuff, which is why you should check out the E-Commerce Fuel community. It's a vetted, vibrant community for 7- and 8-figure brand owners. And joining gives you access to a lively discussion forum for experienced founders sharing insights and getting help, access to our library of over 20,000 member reviews on everything from agencies to tech to lawyers to all the things that, you know, founders are making hiring decisions or purchasing decisions on to run their business, and invites to member events throughout the year. So if that sounds interesting, you can apply for membership and learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Big thanks to one-click upsell from Zipify Apps. Rapidly increase your AOV by offering targeted high-converting upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And also to Fulfill.io, an ERP designed specifically to streamline complex e-commerce businesses and the highest rated ERP among our community members. Learn more at ecommercefuel.com/fulfill. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.